Support for The Front Porch comes from WVGazetteMail.com with two editorial pages, one conservative, one progressive. Kind of like The Front Porch. Check it out at WVGazetteMail.com. And you're on The Front Porch. Over 6 years, drug wholesalers sent 780 million oxycodone and hydrocodone pills into West Virginia. That's enough for 433 pills for every man, woman, and child here. Who let it happen? How did it lead to hundreds and hundreds of deaths? We're going to talk to the investigative reporter, Eric Ayer of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. But first, I'm going to introduce Rick Wilson. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
And we have a guest.
I brought Bo, my boxer, who's being good at the moment, but he might chime in.
This is the only radio show or podcast you'll be on that'll have dog in the background.
Well, he's sleeping right now,
so
he looks real
out.
At peace.
And we're also joined by Lori Lynn, conservative columnist and lawyer. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Scott.
All right, Eric, well, let's get to it. Thanks for joining us. What you've done in your series, Eric, is you've turned our attention kind of upside down. What you see in the daily news is addicts and drug dealers. Occasionally, you hear about a bad doctor, but there are people way above them that were supposed to regulate their actions, the Board of Pharmacy, and their corporations that have legal responsibilities and moral responsibilities to make sure that their products aren't used for harm. Were you surprised at some of these numbers?
I was surprised that some of the smallest pharmacies had the biggest numbers. That was probably one of the biggest surprises. You had a situation in Kermit, which has a population of less than 400 people, and over 2 years, they had nearly 9 million hydrocodone pills.
It's astonishing. Shouldn't somebody have known? The drug wholesalers, who are these people?
Drug wholesalers are the ones that actually ship the pills directly from the manufacturer to the pharmacies or the hospitals. The big three, Cardinal Health, McKesson, and AmerisourceBergen, they're all giant corporations. McKesson is the largest, one of the largest companies in the United States, actually. I think all three of them combined are bigger than Walmart.
And they're sending literally millions of these pills into West Virginia, especially southern West Virginia, right? Because it was very concentrated there. Should they have known? Did they know what they were doing? Who was getting these pills?
Well, they're supposed to report suspicious orders to the DEA and our State Board of Pharmacy. In some of these counties, we did find that there was a huge disproportionate number of pills if you do the math on a per person basis.
They fought releasing this data, right?
Yes. The Gazette, through its lawyer, Pat McGinley, went to court and we filed to intervene, and ultimately they were unsealed.
So is there anything that the drug companies did that could be seen as illegal?
Yeah, they have a legal obligation to report these so-called suspicious orders to the DEA. That's a federal law, and we also have our state law is almost a carbon copy of that. There's been multiple instances of severe fines. McKesson paid a $150 million fine a couple years ago. They've paid $13 million fine, all for not properly reporting the unusual large quantities of orders. Now, these were all in Florida and other places.
The fines are in the millions and the profits are in the billions.
So, Eric, you use phrases like they flooded the market, they poured it in. Rick just said they targeted, but these companies weren't shipping Kit Kats to sit there, you know, in a store. They're filling orders placed by pharmacies that are licensed and regulated by the state, that are filling prescriptions written by doctors who are licensed and regulated by the state. So there's a pharmacy board. Where does that figure in? What was their role in overseeing all of this?
They're supposed to regulate the pharmacies. They're made up of pharmacists, so it's pharmacists regulating other pharmacists. Those suspicious reports are supposed to go directly to the pharmacy board, but for years, for more than a decade, they didn't receive them. And then at one point, they did start receiving the suspicious order reports after a lawsuit was filed against the wholesalers. And then we learned that the Board of Pharmacy never enforced the rules anyway.
Didn't they just take these faxes, these reams and reams of faxes, and box them away?
Yeah, they box them away. They put them on a shelf. I actually went in there and I asked them, I said, since 2012, how many of these suspicious order reports do you have? And he said, I have no clue. They're all in a box, two big boxes. And I actually had to do a hand count, literally page by page, There were 9 months missing of one company, Cardinal Health. The reports were missing from the file, and I was told later that they apparently were faxed in, but whoever the secretary was that did the filing lost them or threw them away.
So when you asked the executive director, what were you doing with all these faxes, these hundreds of pages of suspicious reports of drugs being sent to Southern West Virginia, what did you do with this information? Why didn't you say something? Why didn't you pass it on to the law enforcement? Why didn't you bring it up in a board meeting? What did they say?
Well, good question, because again, they did nothing, but he said that the law does not prescribe what they're supposed to do with a suspicious report, just only that they're supposed to be filed. So there's nothing that tells you what your next step is. So
can I just say how bureaucratic that sounds?
That's absurd.
That's absurd.
You think even if they didn't have enforcement capacities, you might notify law enforcement or someone that something fishy is...
Compile a yearly report. You know, put it in your annual report and just put it out there. I mean, something.
Yeah, well, after I went in and had the boxes pulled and did the count, they did have a meeting. They said they were going to start taking these seriously. There's talk about forwarding them to the Attorney General's office and or the state police. And they're also sending out letters to all wholesalers telling them that they need to submit these suspicious reports. You know, you have AmerisourceBergen, which is the third largest distributor in the country. They haven't filed a single report. And there was one company that filed one.
So there's no consistency anyway.
There's no consistency. And they said that during the meeting.
Part of what gets me about this is that the time period you're exploring here that you had the data for, it's what, 2007 to 2012?
Yes.
I remember very vividly people talking about the prescription drug epidemic, people dying and overdoses. This was not like off people's radar screens. But to my knowledge, nobody's ever really looked at in depth these two players, the wholesalers and then the Board of Pharmacy. Let's get back to the wholesalers. When you asked them, didn't you know that you were poisoning these people in West Virginia? What do they say?
They say every time, over and over, they talk about the doctors and the pharmacies, and they don't say anything about their role, but they say that these are licensed, and they're correct. These are licensed pharmacies. These are licensed doctors. And the responsibility should be with the license, the boards that license those two groups.
Based on their behavior, do you think they knew exactly what was happening?
Obviously, they have their sales orders. Let's take Wyoming County. You have in Oceana one pharmacy, I think it's called Westside Pharmacy, that's getting 700,000 OxyContin pills per year. The Rite Aid, six blocks away, gets 6,000.
One of the pieces of information I thought that was really telling for the corporations was it wasn't just the number of pills that were coming into Southern West Virginia. It was the strength that over a very short period of time, the strength of these pills was going up astronomically.
We talked anecdotally to a number of recovering addicts, and they said to a person, and also the pharmacist, that those higher milligram dosages are the most abused dosages.
What's the profit motive for these bad actor pharmacies?
From what I'm told, it starts small and then the independent pharmacist sees all this cash coming in and it just becomes, they just get caught up in it. And it, you know, and some of these communities are so poor. Scott, like in Madison, you've been there. I mean, what else is there to make money on?
The misery of your relatives and friends?
Yeah, exactly.
These people that own these pharmacies, and Bo doesn't like it either.
He's outraged.
Bo's outraged.
Sustained outrage.
Bo the dog says, don't forget the folks that own these pharmacies, the doctors. I mean, I'm trying to figure out why. I'm asking actually the whole group this. Is it because addicts, we think so little of them, that it's okay to take advantage of their misery? How in the world did this get so bad?
It reminds me of the opium wars in which Great Britain actually went to war with China to have a free market in drugs. I mean, they were pushed on that massive a scale. I mean,
and that was about racism too, wasn't it?
I think so.
Maybe people don't give a crap about folks in Southern West Virginia. They're expendable, or at least out of sight, out of mind. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of like when there's a drug epidemic, say, in a poor community, it's not that big a deal, but when it crosses over to affect middle and upper class people, suddenly it becomes a tragedy.
As the one pharmacist we talked to said, it's they're all in bed together. That it's sort of this ugly chain, but nobody wants to take responsibility.
And then there's a saying, shit rolls downhill too.
Yeah, the Appalachian version. Is that your Bible verse for this week?
It's pretty cool. Actually, I do have one. There's a part where Jesus says, woe unto those, you know, who make these children stumble. It would be better that a millstone were tied around their neck and they be drowned in the depths of the sea. That's for people who set up obstacles for people to fall victim to. I don't think he would be too happy about that.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about who's responsible for this epidemic of oxycodone and hydrocodone pills flooding into West Virginia. But first, you're listening to The Front Porch for these in-depth conversations about our culture, our history. Whether you live in West Virginia or are part of the worldwide hillbilly diaspora, we depend on you to make this podcast possible, along with our education programs, Mountain Stage, Inside Appalachia, the list goes on and on. So I'm asking you to think about becoming a sustaining member of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I tell you, when I see that gift coming out of my bank account, I feel pride. So here's how you become a sustaining member. You go to wvpublic.org and click the donate button in the upper right-hand corner. That's wvpublic.org, click donate, and feel good about yourself. Thanks. And we're talking with Eric Ayer. He is the investigative reporter with the Charleston Gazette Mail about his blockbuster series about hydrocodone and oxycodone flooding into West Virginia and who's responsible. There's a reason why your story focuses up to 2012. Have things changed since then very much? What's happened since
then? Yeah, they rescheduled hydrocodone to make more restrictions on it. And that has caused a sharp decline in hydrocodone. Oxycodone has had a little bit of an uptick, and also the overdose deaths due to OxyContin and hydrocodone have declined slightly. And the new killer drug, of course, is heroin. I just looked at the preliminary 2016, this year's numbers, and heroin is again increasing significantly. And then out of the other one is that fentanyl is almost edging up as close to heroin. But those right now are 1 and 2 for the overdose deaths.
And I think most of our listeners know this, but just in case they don't, heroin, fentanyl, oxycodone, hydrocodone, they're all opioids. Now, heroin's illegal, but they're all the same type of drug.
Yeah, that's been the transition. They say it sort of set the stage, the pain pills.
So you've had some personal experience. Your neighbors turned out to be heroin dealers.
Yes. We had heroin dealers in a nice area of Edgewood in Charleston's west side.
And what was that like to live next to that?
It was tough. It was like Taco Bell with people coming in. We actually shared a driveway with the heroin house.
You guys were terrified, weren't you? I mean, to leave.
Yeah, we actually got to the point where there was they would raid the house. People would run and scatter, and it would be okay for about 2 or 3 days. And then they would just kind of come back. Kanawha sheriffs actually followed the guy who did some surveillance on him and busted him down at the local Wendy's, and they found heroin and other things, and he went to jail. And
does that motivate you to do these sorts of stories?
I mean, probably in a small way.
You would have been okay dealing with it from a distance, though, right?
Yeah, it was very unsettling. I mean, we thought of moving and all those other things that go through your head.
It's just one of those things where this is one of those issues. It does affect everybody's life, whether it's your neighbor, your property values, your friends. I mean, look what happened with the Grubbs and their daughter. It starts as something you feel like is far away from you, but now it's affecting all of us.
Since this article came out, I really wasn't aware. I mean, so many people affected, just like you said. I have gotten emails from Brazil. I've gotten emails from Raleigh County, all over the country, from people that, you know, are saying that they had an overdose in the family and this and that and the other. And then the other set is another, lots of emails from people who grew up in West Virginia and worry about the state, and now are a bunch of them like CEOs at big corporations in outside of West Virginia. Even though they're not here, they're still concerned about the problem.
Well, I appreciate you coming by. I appreciate you doing your part to try to tell this story and look forward to whatever comes next. Eric Ayer, investigative reporter with the Charleston Gazette-Mail. Thanks for coming.
Good to be here.
And that's The Front Porch for this week. I'm Scott Finn, along with Rick Wilson and Lori Lynn. Thanks for listening.